day trading for me is very speculative. And it's something that if you want to go ahead and gamble a very, very small portion of your portfolio, be my guest. It's your money. But we really shouldn't be day trading our nest egg, our retirement.
Becoming a millionaire isn't just about growing your money. It's also about protecting and preserving your wealth by using the right financial strategies for your situation. Welcome. This is Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi. John has his Master's of Science in Financial Services and is a certified financial planner and the president of Epiphany Capital.
Welcome into another edition of Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi and myself to talk about leveling up our financial knowledge, some stock market topics we need to know, some terms and things. If you've ever wanted to learn just a little bit more about investing in the stock market, then this is the episode for you. We're going to cover some of those terms you've probably heard before and probably even know a little bit, but maybe we're going to drill that down or just explain it in a way that might resonate better. And as always, if you got questions, need help, reach out to John before you take any action. You can find him online at johnchoi.net. He is a certified financial planner, a CFP, and the president at Epiphany Capital. And we are going to have this conversation today. What's going on, my friend? How are you this week?
It's great. We're having some unseasonably warm November weather.
That's right.
And
I'll take it.
Trick-or-treating, and we weren't wearing big winter jackets. I know here in Chicago, I just heard from my neighbor 3 years ago, we had 3.5 inches of snow on the ground on Halloween, and it was like 60 degrees. So it was great.
Yeah. No, fantastic. It's been unseasonably nice around different areas, so we'll take it. I'm not going to complain. Because before you know it, it won't be here. So
yeah,
we'll roll with what we can roll. But hey, listen, you know, you and I, we talked a fair bit about the amount of volatility that's been going on, obviously, in 2022. We've seen some good. October had a great month in the market. And so a lot of people are like, oh, is the bear over? Maybe the bear's over. Maybe we're back into a bull. And so we hear these terms. So I thought, well, let's go through some of this stuff and let you explain a few of these things, okay?
Sure, ask away.
All right, so I mentioned the bear, the bull, so I'll get to that one in just a second. But before I get to that, what's the difference between, so if you're thinking about, if you're like purchasing anything in an individual stock or something, or if you've got like some play money that you like to dabble, because even if you're thinking and you're working with an advisor for a retirement strategy, some people still want to have some money set aside that they can kind of play in the market with. Maybe that's, you know, you're not risking too much. Hopefully you're being smart with it, but you might do that. And if you do, you see things like bid and ask and the bid ask spread. What is that? And is it helpful?
Yeah, so when I say bid-ask spread, I've got to say it very slowly,
right?
Very
bid
carefully.
Ask spread.
Bid-ask, okay?
So, that is true. That is true.
So, and sometimes the ask, you can substitute the word offer for it. So sometimes it's a bid and offer or bid and ask, but that's okay. So the bid price. So I'll tell you how, when you buy and sell stocks, how it actually works. So Mark, let's just say that you were trying to sell 100 shares of GE stock, and I'm trying to buy 100 shares of GE stock. So when you sell, when you look at the quote for GE, let's just say it's $40.50. That just represents the last trade. And we don't, not at our level, but you can pay for a subscription that really drills down to it. But basically, that price that you're seeing is the last transaction. We don't know if it's a bid. We don't know if it's the ask price. That's what it is. And so when you are selling the stock for $40.50, let's say that's the bid price, and that's what you're going to get for it. Now, I want to buy GE, and the ask price is, let's just say it's $40.75. And so even though you're selling it for $40.50, I have to buy it for $40.75. Where does that 25 cents go? That's what people want to know. Mm-hmm. And what truly happens is that Mark is not selling GE stock to John Choi. Mm-hmm. Mark is selling that GE stock to something called a market maker. And then the market maker turns around and he sells that to John Choi.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a person.
There's always a middle guy. or gal.
There's the middleman, mm-hmm. right? And again, he's called a market maker. And they serve a very, very useful purpose, and that is to provide liquidity to both sides. And so he gets to keep that 25 cents. Now, for a big company like GE, mm-hmm. it may not be that big of a spread. It might be a penny or maybe a couple of pennies. Back in the day when I first started in 93, it could have been 25 cents or 50 cents. And they were making hay while the sun was shining back then. But yeah, they've tightened that up a lot. But that's what a bid and ask is. And I don't know if you've ever seen those commercials where they say, oh, trade commission free on our platform. Have you seen those?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then you say, well, how does that company make money? I mean, if they're not making money from me, the trader, who are they making money from? You ever wonder that?
Yeah. They got to be making it somewhere.
You're right.
They're not doing
it
for free.
And so what they do, and there's a little asterisk a lot of times, and when they say commission-free trades, they're talking about a certain universe, not the entire universe, but a certain portion of stocks. And usually those are the smaller, less known, less traded stocks. And so the bid and ask could be, let's say it's a $5 bid, it could be a 50 cent spread and it's a $5.50 ask. And so they will act as the market maker and they will keep that 50 cents. And you don't know, because if you buy it for $5.50, it's immediately only worth $5. And so that's not good. That's
gotcha.
A big spread.
Yeah.
And that's where they make their money.
Okay. All right. So that's that additional kind of thought there, process on that one. So again, we're doing some terms and things you might want to know when it comes to the stock market. Now, I mentioned the bull and the bear. Obviously, we have been in a bull run for, some would say, 12 years, second longest bull run ever. Then in 22, we had some problems. And by the time we got to summer, we had the bear shows up. So obviously, the tech-heavy indexes took it first, right? Eventually, right. They kind of all got into bear territory. And October, the end of October, saw a nice little pullback there, or a tick up. And a couple of them got back out of that bear territory. So what is a bear? What is a bull? And what is that territory?
So a bull market is basically a stock market that is trending up. And a bear market is a market that is trending down.
Hibernation, if you will, right?
Yeah, hibernation. And you've got some people that say, you know, if it's down 15% from its highs, then we're in a bear market, or 20%.
20% is kind of the official, isn't it?
That is the official. And, you know, by that definition, we're not in a bear market yet, because I think the S&P is only down like 15% or so from the beginning of the year. And I think 1 year ago, it's about the same. It's about 15-18%.
I think NASDAQ was the one that really did it.
That took it on the chin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you'll see these terms every time you open up any, you know, you get something on your computer, it'll say the Dow's up or down today. When you open it, it says, did we just get out of a bull? Did we just get out of the bear? Are we sliding back in? Right. So people see these terms all the time. So it's good to clarify.
Yeah. But you got to also remember, we're in a 100-year bull market right now. So just to keep things in perspective. Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. So those are the terms. And those, again, they kind of play around with the numbers a little bit, but I think most of us know what that is.
Just think bull market is up and bear market is down.
There you go. Can you explain some of the more popular trading strategies, like a buy and hold, for example, or day trading or things of that nature?
Sure. Day trading is basically, you are trading your money based on a forecast, right? I think the stock market's going to go up and I'm going to buy it, or I think the stock market's going to go down, so I'm going to sell it. And you're doing that, you're running these trades every day, right? That's called day trading. And what happens in day trading, the problem is that, number one, no one knows where the market's going. Number two, there are transaction costs associated with it. And number three, we just talk about bid-ask spreads. And so every time you trade a stock, you're losing a little bit in the bid-ask spread. So day trading for me is very speculative. And it's something that if you want to go ahead and gamble a very, very small portion of your portfolio, be my guest. It's your money. But we really shouldn't be day trading our NASDAQ, our retirement fund.
Yeah, for sure. I mentioned like the NASDAQ and the Dow and the S&P. There's other markets. There's a ton of them. People don't realize there's often that there's a lot more than just those couple ones.
Yeah, there's the EFA. There's the Russell 2000. There's a lot of
Pimlico
indices.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what's the best way to understand the differences? I think maybe for a lot of us, John, instead of buying an individual stock, we often buy something that's in an index, right? And so it's running an index against the S&P or something like that. Can you explain that, those differences?
Sure. So let me start with the Dow. And sometimes it's called the Dow 30 or the Dow Industrial Average. It's just made up of 30 stocks, U.S. large stocks. And so it's just using those 30 as an indicator of the health of the economy. And I think that's a little antiquated because how many companies are there in the U.S.?
Yeah, 30.
Thousands.
It blows people's mind. Many people don't realize until they hear that it's only 30.
It's only 30 companies. Yeah. And you know, they do reconstitute that index. And so if you're not cutting the mustard, you're going to get replaced by another company. So,
well, I think because it's got the bigger number, is we tend to pay attention to it maybe. You know, because it's, you know, it's well over 30,000 or whatever the case might be, right? So versus when you see some of the other ones. So I think the headline purposes, it tends to get some of the attention. But the S&P seems to be the one that ideally is used for most financial stuff.
It is. And, you know, when someone says the market, how did the market do today? They're really referring to the Dow 30. But for myself and a lot of the other professionals, and what I hope will be a proxy of the U.S. stock market, and this is only U.S., is the S&P 500, which is the 500 largest U.S. stocks that we have. But we have to be careful because it's a weighted index. And what that means is that Google or ExxonMobil, which are these, and Walmart, these huge behemoth companies, they're going to have, their price change is going to have more effect up or down than, let's just say, the mattress store, which is might be number 500,
okay,
right?
Right.
So if they go up or down, it's really not going to affect it. So we have to be careful about that. But
okay,
it is the best proxy that we have for the quote-unquote U.S. stock market.
Okay. And NASDAQ tends to be tech-heavy, right?
Yeah, so, tech heavy. Yeah. Big tech stocks are going to be, that's kind of a proxy for tech stocks and U.S. large tech stocks.
So. Okay. What is volume and why is it important to investing in the stock market?
Volume is going to be important because it really drives that bid-ask spread. Volume is how many shares are traded per day, right? And okay, so if there isn't a large volume, the market maker has to provide liquidity, and he doesn't want to be holding the bag. And so he's kind of like a bookie, right? He's trying to match up both sides. He is. It really is. And the spread, the bid-ask spread, that's his vig, okay? And so when you have thin volume or low volume, you're going to have a bigger spread. And if you remember, like GameStop, you remember how it just went absolutely nuts.
Oh, it's so silly, yeah. And brought about by obviously what was happening on the back end with the little guy and the whole Robin Hood thing. But yeah,
yeah, and Reddit. And there's a whole story. We can do a podcast episode on just that. And anyway,
and it's funny. It still shows up. Like it's like one of the main ones that keeps showing up when it'll automatically kind of give you a rundown of the day's events. Before that, GameStop wouldn't be on there for anything. But boy, it is now. Same thing with AMC too.
Yeah, and before the run up, you saw the volume very 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 low, big bid ask spread, and then when the volume just went through the roof, you know, and there was a lot of trading, there was it really the bid ask spread was down,
gotcha.
And really that's what the volume is
okay,
is how many shares are trading per day.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we also hear terms like short in the market. Well, I'm going to short it, or someone says they're going to try to short it. What is that?
Shorting the market is basically if you believe that the stock price is going to go down, you're going to short it. You know, most of us, when we buy a company like Coca-Cola, we believe that it will go up in the future. But when you short a company, again, let's use GameStop, for example. They had a huge short interest. In other words, there were a lot of people that were betting that it would go down. And so the way the mechanics of a short works is that, and this is an example that I've heard years and years and years ago. Let's say, Mark, we're neighbors, and you come to knock on my door and you say, "Hey, John, can I borrow your lawnmower?" And I said, "Of course." And you borrow my lawnmower, and then you go and turn around and you sell it. And it was worth $500 when you sold it.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, you're going to have to give me back my lawnmower.
Right.
And your hope is that if you sold it for $500, you can go out and get it on sale at Lowe's or Home Depot for $400. You'll buy it for $400. You'll pocket the difference of that $100. And then you're going to give me back my lawnmower. So I'm fine. I have my lawnmower back, but you have $100 in your pocket because you basically sold high and bought low, right?
Yeah.
Which is the same thing as buy low, sell high, except you just did in a reverse sequence.
Gotcha. Okay. And that's really all it is.
Yeah. And so you're borrowing shares, and there is a cost to that. You borrow shares from somebody that owns it, and with the thought and the intention that you have to replace it later. And so when they call a short squeeze, and that's what happened to GameStop, all these huge hedge fund companies, they had borrowed GameStop shares from the owners of GameStop. And it started going up and up and up. And you're like, oh my gosh, I borrowed it and I sold it for, you know, what was it, $5. And it's now I've got to replace this thing. It's going to cost me $200-$400. I better hurry up and buy this thing, take it on the chin, and give it back to John, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whoever the owner is.
Yeah.
And the higher it goes, the more desperate you're getting. And then the next guy who borrowed it, now it's at $250. Now he's getting desperate, so he covers his short, right? Which means he's basically buying it back and delivering the shares back to the original owner. And then that buying pressure keeps making the stock go up. And so it's a reverse death spiral, if you will. it's a tornado funnel up. And that's why those guys got really hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And they lost billions of dollars when they were covering their shorts.
And, of course, that was, like you said, the whole story, their big story there. Most people have already seen that. But that's where a bunch of people on the internet decided to get together and, so quote, unquote, stick it to the hedge fund, kind of force them to you know, take it on the chin, if you will. So, and yeah, maybe we'll do a conversation about that another time. But
yeah,
in the interest of wrapping up today, I wanted to just do one or two quick more real fast. A lot of people look for dividend-paying stocks. Pretty self-explanatory, but just to be on the safe side, go ahead. What is that?
Dividend-paying stocks are going to be your more mature stocks, again, like a Coca-Cola or a Microsoft or some established Walmart, some established company. And basically, they are returning their capital basically to the owners of the company. And that it's usually paid out because they have excess profits. And so you're not going to have to wait until you sell the shares to actually get some money back. And I've heard stories where, you know, you could have bought Starbucks years and years and years ago, and just from the dividends alone, you would have just covered what you paid for it, and then everything you have is gravy. So dividend is just paying out the excess money that they have back to their owners, which are the shareholders.
Okay. Final one that I have, and then I'll see if you have anything you'd like to share, but IPO. We hear that quite often nowadays. It's a new IPO out there. Should I get in on it? You know, kind of thing. What's an IPO?
Initial public offering. That's what an IPO stands for. So everything that we trade right now, okay, so again, I'll take Coca-Cola as an example.
Mm-hmm.
That's traded on what we call the secondary markets. And so, you know, we've got to buy it from a market maker, we sell it to a market maker, and, you know, that's a secondary market. An IPO is basically when a new company gets listed on an exchange, and it's available for the very first time to purchase. And you'll buy it from an investment bank like Goldman Sachs or, you know, whoever. And let's say I had a company, let's say Boston Chicken, if you remember that. It was years and years and years ago.
And then it became Boston Market. And you know.
Yeah. So when Boston Chicken came out, it was the hottest IPO. And what I mean by that is this. In an IPO, all that money that's being raised at the IPO price, I think Boston Chicken came out at around $40. And so the investment company said, hey, we're going to sell a, I'm just going to make up these numbers, it was much more than a million shares, but we're going to sell a million shares and we're going to do it $40 a share and we're going to guarantee that you get $40 million. And so when the IPO comes out and it's the initial offering price is $40, but let's just say that people think it's going to go higher and higher and higher and it opens up, it pops up to, I think it went way above $40. Let's just say it was $80. Well, does Boston Chicken get $80? No, they only get $40.
Gotcha.
And so, but I paid only $40 for it, right? Because that's what I promised as an investor. So I pay $40 for it. And immediately on day one, I can go ahead and sell that for $80 or whatever it comes out for.
Yeah, so if you bought 100 at $40, but they got pushed up to the $80, you've immediately, you know, made a profit if you get rid of it.
Right. And so that's a hot IPO.
Sure.
Facebook, I forget what happened with Facebook, but there was a lot of interest in Facebook. And then it went below the IPO price a couple days later or a week later. And they said, oh, this thing's a dog. And then obviously we know what happened after that. But that's the hope and the play is that we will pay a set amount, the IPO price. And hopefully when it comes out, because there's so much interest in buying this company, it'll come out at a lot higher price than the IPO price that you purchased it for.
So. Okay. All right. So that's some terms that we might want to know when we're talking about the stock market. John, anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up this week?
I think that's pretty much it. You know, we've got a lot of, I mean, we've barely scratched the surface.
Oh, there's so many more, but yeah.
So, you know, I think the best thing to do is, this is a, I don't want to say a game, but this is a game played by professionals. And if we're not careful as individual investors and we don't even know the rules of some of these games, we're going to get busted here. And so work with a financial professional. And if you're going to do it yourself, please, please, please know the terms, know the rules, and educate yourself on wherever resource available. There's a lot of information out there, maybe even too much information. So now we got to sift through that.
Yeah.
A certified financial planner or a good advisor can help you sort through all that. So,
absolutely. And that's one of the reasons we do the show. So hopefully you enjoyed the content this week. And if so, subscribe to the show on Apple, Google, Spotify, whatever platform you like to use. Type in Middle Class Millionaire in the search box of one of those apps or just stop by John's website, johnchoy.net. That's johnchoy.net. Or reach out to him at 847-247-0850. If you've got some questions and you need to get started with a consultation or conversation, he is a certified financial planner at Epiphany Capital. John, thanks for hanging out, my friend. I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Take care, Mark.
We'll see you next time right here on Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi.
Bye, everybody.
Epiphany Capital is a registered investment advisor, RIA, located in the state of Illinois. Epiphany Capital provides investment advisory and related services for clients nationally. Epiphany Capital will maintain all applicable registration and licenses as required by various states in which Epiphany Capital conducts business, as applicable. Epiphany Capital renders individualized responses to persons in a particular state only after complying with all regulatory requirements or pursuant to an applicable state exemption or exclusion.